So yesterday, we were at the Woodland Park Zoo, and it's been a while since I was last there, and it turns out they've turned kind of that tunnel that used to have the mongooses in it into what they are now calling the reptile realm. And in one of the enclosures, we were looking at this very prehistoric-looking skink. It was just sunning itself on a branch. There was also supposed to be, in the same enclosure, a leaf frog. And from the picture, it was kind of this gnarly-looking gray frog with a pointy nose, and it did very much resemble a leaf. We looked and we looked, but we couldn't find it. We were moving our heads so we could see up, and then we were looking down. And it wasn't a small frog either, but it was hiding from us. We couldn't see it. And then my spouse looked at a sign, and she points and she said, "There's actually supposed to be a lot of them in here." So more looking. And then I noticed, right in the very front, pressed up against the glass, there it was. Actually, there were two of them next to each other. They'd been sitting there the whole time, just blending in, chilling. Their pointed snouts and leaf-like appearance did make very good camouflage. "Hey, there's another," my daughter shouted, "and another." Once we found that first one, it was easy. They were there all along. Today, our gospel picks up 6 days after Peter has confessed that Jesus is the Messiah. And here, Jesus takes Peter and James and John up a high mountain, and there, Matthew tells us, he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. But it's not just Jesus. Moses and Elijah are there too. And then a bright cloud comes and overshadows them, and a familiar voice speaks, "This is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." And then, just as suddenly as it had begun, it was over. Peter and James and John look up again to see Jesus. This time he's standing there alone. And those frogs at the zoo got me thinking, what if this event that we call the Transfiguration, is not primarily about Jesus becoming something that he wasn't before? What if it is actually about the disciples being changed in how they see him? What if it is their perception catching up to reality? Their eyes being opened to what had always been true. In an article from The Atlantic titled "Things You Cannot Unsee and What They Say About Your Brain," Alexis Madrigal describes an experience most, I think, if not all of us have had. You know, when someone points something out to you and then you just cannot unsee it. Now, I'm a really visual person, so I've taken the liberty of printing off some images for you. So if you could take out your sheet and look at those. And first, I want you to start with this logo for the 2014 FIFA World Cup in Brazil. It's supposed to be a stylized version of the trophy. But if you look at it for a little while, you notice there's a yellow thing that kind of looks like a hand, and then it looks like it's a facepalm. You can't unsee it now. You're welcome. And then I want you to look at the logo for Toblerone Chocolate. Do you see anything there? A face? A bear. Yes, so in that mountain, if you look in the mountain, there is a bear, and this is created in the white space there, and it is a nod toward Toblerone's original home, which is the Swiss town of Bern, whose official symbol is the bear. The logo hasn't changed. The colors are remaining the same, but your mind is organizing the shapes differently now. Now I want you to look at the black and white image. At first, it looks just kind of random, like black and white blobs. But what if I now tell you it's a frog? So it's this picture, and there are two eyes and a mouth and nose and a leg and some branches around. Do you see the frog? No? I have one more visual aid. It's kind of fuzzy, but this is the grayscale picture that it was taken from. Do you see the frog now? And now if you look back at the black and white, do you see the frog? Yeah. And then there is that pink and gray picture. I discovered this one on social media, and it kind of blew my brain a little bit. What do you think that is? What do you see there? Forks. Have you seen this before? So it's forks. It's forks on like a pink towel. You can see the tines at the top. The realization, good. Yeah, after I saw it the first time, now I can't see anything but forks in it. So neuroscientists say that perception is not just simply raw data coming in through the eyes. The brain is constantly sending predictions downward, shaping what we notice. What we expect to see influences what we actually see. We experience the world as a kind of hybrid reality, part sensory input and part interpretation. In other words, what you know shapes what you see. On that mountain, Jesus doesn't suddenly acquire divine glory. The Gospel of Matthew has already called him Emmanuel, meaning God with us. At his baptism, that same voice that we hear from heaven already declared him a beloved son. The light revealed on the mountain is not newly manufactured light. The veil has just been lifted. Instead, the change happens in some mysterious way in the disciples. Their expectations are stretched. Their categories are rearranged. Their understanding of what Messiah means is expanded beyond some political hope, and it is transformed into radiant holiness. It is as if, for a moment, the outline of the frog or the outline of those forks are traced for them. And once they see it, they can never go back. Frederick Buechner once wrote, "Even with us, something like that happens once in a while. Every once and so often, something so touching, so incandescent, so alive, transfigures the human face that is almost beyond bearing. A father walking with his child, a woman baking bread, a stranger listening to music. An ordinary person, suddenly luminous. The face has not changed. The person has not become somebody else, but we see them differently. Something in us shifts, and the light breaks through." That's what happens on the mountain. The disciples glimpse the fullness of Jesus' identity. They see the glory that has been present in every healing touch, every parable, every shared meal. The mountain doesn't create this glory. It points it out to them. And here's the quiet miracle of it all. When the cloud lifts and the brightness fades, Jesus looks ordinary again. His clothes are no longer dazzling. His face no longer shines like the sun. The vision recedes. But the disciples cannot entirely unsee what they've seen. They walk back down the mountain carrying a new interpretive key. When they hear Jesus speak, they will remember the voice from the cloud. When they see him pray, they will remember his shining face. And eventually, when they see him disfigured on a cross, they will hold in tension the memory of that radiance. The one who suffers will be the same as the one who shone. Madrigal's article on perception suggests that our brains are always predicting. If we expect danger, we'll notice more threats around. If we expect insignificance, we will overlook wonder. But if we are trained to expect glory hidden in ordinary places, we will begin to perceive it. I think that the spiritual life may be, at least in part, about allowing God to reshape our expectations. To hear, "This is my son, the beloved, listen to him," is to let our inner categories be rewired, to allow our vision to be recalibrated. The Transfiguration does not only tell us who Jesus is. It hints also at how the world actually is. Perhaps the person sitting next to you carries more radiance than you ever assumed. Perhaps your own life is more beloved than you ever dared to believe. When they look up and see no one except Jesus himself alone, he appears ordinary again. Yet they know that the ordinary is not merely ordinary. It is layered. It is shining beneath the surface. Just like the frog or the fork or the facepalm or the bear, and spying those once hidden leaf frogs, the Transfiguration is not about Jesus changing into something other than himself. It is about human sight being expanded. It is about the veil lifting. It is about our perception catching up with truth. And once you have glimpsed that kind of light, once you have seen that the love of God pulses at the very heart of reality, you may still forget, you may still doubt, you may still descend into the valley, but you will never be able to entirely unsee it.